with episode 585 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and my, what are they doing to that woman? And no, I don't even mean Cersei.
And this is Bronson from Australia, and yep, damn it, Edmund, stole my thunder.
Would that be Velvet Thunder? Anyway. Do we already forget? Anyhow, we are going to be talking about some news from the last week.
Do I sound like Andre Brower?
No. But we are going to be starting with the news from the past week, and then we are going to get into shows 11 through 20 of our annual retrospective. But before we do any of that, I guess we have a general disclaimer that we can give.
Yes, this is where I warn everybody that you're going to be spoiled. And since this is the news show, we mean that in only the best possible ways, as we bring you all the juiciest tidbits from this past week, and then, of course, some of the better tidbits from the past year.
That's right. And why don't we go ahead and start off, as I said, with the news. And Edmund, why don't you give us our first one?
Absolutely. We are in that season where things are starting to get renewed, of course. And A&E has just announced that Bates Motel has been renewed for two more seasons, which will be two seasons of 10 episodes each. So they are continuing to go with their smaller cable orders. While this is not a show that I've gotten into, I have heard very good things about it. And, of course, Vera Farmiga was nominated for her role as Mama Norma, and we'll be continuing with Freddie Highmore as Norman, and some other folks that we have, some we've at least heard of, like Nestor Carbonell, apparently, has now landed on Bates Motel, so that's good news for him, and that is two more seasons, so going into 2016 and 2017, and then they will decide again if they can stretch out the prequel any longer than that before they've actually made it to the movie.
Yeah, maybe they will just go right into the another shot-by-shot recreation, maybe. I don't know. Isn't that the way that things work these days? Speaking of, we have some news about The Returned. Yes, the American remake of Le Revenant from France. We've talked many times about how we were wondering if A&E was going to renew this for a second season. And as it turned out, Edmund, as you so wonderfully put it when you first saw this, The Returned will not return. So there we are. And that's literally all it says. There is a one-line thing in this PR blurb here. A&E has canceled drama The Returned after a single season. They don't even punctuate the sentence. It's just there. Getting a little bit lazy on the PR department, I suppose, but there we are.
Yes.
But perhaps a little bit better news when it comes to adaptations from our friend Franz Thumb.
Yes, indeed. So there was talk a few years ago back, don't know the exact dates, but that a television adaptation of the Neil Gaiman novel American Gods was being put together on HBO. HBO very quietly cancelled that and with very little press. But now it looks like Stars has ordered the adaptation to series. Stars is partnering with production company Fremantle Media and executive producers Neil Gaiman, Michael Green, and but Brian Fuller's involved as well, which has me both yay because he's awesome, but also because I want him focusing on Hannibal.
Yes, of course.
he's a big part of why Hannibal is awesome.
I'm sure we'll be hearing more about that throughout the this week. I can only imagine. But at any rate,
it's not the first time Brian Fuller has put his hand up to do double duty on a show, because the pilots for Hannibal and Mockingbird Lane, I think it was called, but his remake version of The Munsters, I believe it was.
Yes.
They were both on the table at the same time, and he was prepared to be the showrunner for both. Mockingbird Lane wasn't picked up, however, he did find an excuse to bring Eddie Izzard over onto Hannibal with great effect.
Absolutely. Mm.
And well, we shall see. I doubt that he will be, you know, that distracted. He seems to be pretty good at being able to, at the very least, shall we say, cover his bases.
Yeah,
he's a great choice for... Oh, sorry.
I was just going to say, I do want to give the writer of this article kudos for speculating that now that it's switched to Stars, whether it will now be American Gods, G-O-D-Z.
Yes.
That's a different series.
Yeah.
American Gods with Us Dead is what it would be if it was from the perspective of the New Gods.
Nicely done.
And if you don't, and if you don't get that reference, then you then you really ought to read American Gods because it's a fantastic book.
Well, yeah, now you're now on notice, everyone, that if this is really going forward at Stars, you have exactly as much time as it takes for this to get on the air to read the original novel, which I believe has been out for quite some time, well over a decade. So
yeah,
get to it.
Yeah, about 12 years, I think, at this point.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think that 10th anniversary edition was a couple of years ago, so just a little bit of time to catch up.
Just a little bit. So it looks like there's going to be some time for people to catch up with a certain show from Showtime, Edmund.
Absolutely. All you silly people who haven't been watching all along, Penny Dreadful will now have a third season for you to catch up on, which is very good news because the second season has been far from a sophomore slump. They have been filling the story out and expanding on what they started in the first season, basically. So we will continue to see the odd adventures of Eva Green and Timothy Dalton and whichever fabulous guest stars they'll be bringing in for season three, although they're going to have a hard time matching Patti LuPone from the current run.
Interesting. Yeah, I this is one of those shows I really need to eventually catch up on. I've been remiss, even with, you know, Eva Green being involved, because usually she's brings good value. Let's put it that way.
Absolutely. And even for those people who may have been a little down on some of Billy Piper's acting chops, like myself, she is doing a very serviceable job in as a character whose name I can't say because that would give away one of the big things from the end of the first season.
We thank you, those of us who have been foolish. All right. Well, moving on to movie news, we can then bring you some news about the Gambit film. I guess they have decided to report on the director that has been hired. It is Rupert Wyatt, who is perhaps best known recently for Rise of the Planet of the Apes. He will be directing, and yes, the producers are Channing Tatum, Reed Carolan, Lauren Shuler Donner, and Simon Kinberg. This is obviously going to be the kind of expansion of the X-Men franchise taking place in the wake of Bryan Singer's departure, and we'll have to see whether or not this is a good thing or a bad thing. Still not sure, haven't seen any footage, being agnostic about the whole thing.
Yes.
There you go. However, I guess that there is some news out of Disney as well about certain live action efforts of late getting an expansion.
Yes, there is. The Maleficent movie will apparently have a sequel, or they at least have hired a writer, Linda Wolverton, to pen the sequel, and of course are hoping to entice Angelina Jolie to return in the title role. And certainly with the box office success of the first film, this is hardly a big surprise. Linda Wolverton is a long time Disney hand on things like The Lion King, and also apparently did work on the first film. So for those who liked Maleficent or worried about Once Upon a Time getting canceled, this is in the pipeline.
Yeah, Disney has been doing quite a lot in terms of doing live action adaptations and twists on their old classic animated films. So there we are. This one wasn't particularly bad, as I recall. I don't know if any of you got a chance to see it, but it was decent. Interesting spin. Anyhow, let's see.
I'll have to take your word for that.
I have kids, so yeah. These films are a regular staple of our household. Anyhow, moving on to something that is a little more obscure. I'm not even sure how many people who are listeners here or even co-hosts are familiar with this novel, but apparently there is an adaptation of Frank Herbert's novel Soul Catcher. This is a particularly, let's put it this way. It's from 1972, and it's not a Dune novel, so it's probably not one that has been on too many people's radar. But this is a film that is very much in the vein of Native American lore. And let's see, who is it that is going to be? I guess they are saying here. Sorry, it is the director is going to be Chris Ayer, I believe it is, or
yep,
yeah, Ayer, who is particularly well known for doing films with a Native American perspective. So, yes, some people may have seen his film Smoke Signals, which actually I do recall from quite some time ago. That was the late 90s, yes. This is a film that probably really falls within his wheelhouse. And I will say it is a very peculiar novel in terms of it not being the kind of high space opera type of stuff that most people were used to from Herbert. This is back during his period of time when he was doing things that were more earthbound, yet still very... kind of out there and philosophical and psychological in nature. Any of you guys read Soul Catcher?
I did not, but the other credit that intrigues me greatly is the fact that it's a screenplay that's been adapted by John Sayles, who of course is one of our finer writers and directors. Just aside from all the work he has official credit for, I mean, he's been one of Hollywood's go-to script doctors for decades now. So and certainly given his history of socially relevant work in his own films, I think that's a pretty good match.
Mm. And unless my eyes deceive me, Gary, have you been able to join us this evening?
Yes, I am, sir. I'm right here. I'm sorry. I was running late. A bit of teenage angst to deal with before I got on the wireless.
Ah, yes. Yes, all too familiar. Anyway, moving on from that then to perhaps other news. Wait, this seems like it's actually in vain with that to a certain extent.
Why, yes, it is. I'll be glad to take it. What we're talking about is a Hit Girl movie that's in development. For those of you not familiar or just a few months out of your memory, the character Hit Girl comes from the Kick-Ass movies, the girl with the blue hair. And they're talking about making what is, in a sense, a prequel movie to the Kick-Ass franchise with a Hit Girl movie explaining how the two characters of Hit Girl and Big Daddy come into being. The writer, Matthew Vaughn, says that he's really interested in it. He feels it'd be a nice break before they push through with Kick-Ass 3. But given the lukewarm reception that Kick-Ass 2 received in the box offices, 3 isn't quite the slam dunk that Vaughn is boasting to move on to after this prequel. But if the prequel generates enough, then maybe they can get that third movie out of it. So we'll just have to wait and see.
Hmm. Yeah, I was a little bit surprised when I saw the part about potentially a Kick-Ass 3. Maybe he's got a lot of money he can throw at that. Who knows? But speaking of movies that are kind of ephemeral and may never happen, or reportedly may happen, I'm not sure. I'm not sure where we fall on this one either. Ronstum, if you don't mind.
Well, there are reports coming out of Lucasfilm that they're planning to get a fifth Indiana Jones movie onto cinema screens during the fourth quarter of 2018. So just over 3 years away at this point. This is coming after some other reports that Steven Spielberg was looking at Chris Pratt as being the guy to take up the role of Indiana Jones, since Harrison Ford is probably a little over the hill for it. Pratt himself has, in a few interviews, been asked about it and said, "Yeah, look, there's nowhere. Nothing's been confirmed. There's been nothing official happening or whatnot." But the article here on IGN points out that given Pratt's most recent blockbuster film, Jurassic World, did pretty well at the box office in its opening weekend, him being a box office draw in addition to like a really good screen presence means that he'd definitely be at the top of those lists. This is also coming about a month after Kathleen Kennedy, the president of Lucasfilm, confirming that a fifth movie is definitely going to happen at some point. It looks like it's going to be a little later rather than a little sooner. And we don't know much more about this
movie. Yeah. Well, I mean, keep in mind this is still part of the big Disney buy of Lucasfilm, and you know, they went for the big money with all the Star Wars stuff. Now they're hitting Indiana Jones. I mean, they're going to go through every possible thing Lucas owns to try and see what they can remarket or pull out and dust off. So you know, this doesn't surprise me, and given its popularity, I'm sure there will be one. So.
Yeah, I can't imagine that there wouldn't be, given it's more of a matter of finding a way to do it without, well, perhaps the right word here is pissing everybody off, but there we are.
I'm still waiting for them to release the Star Wars Christmas special. There's tons of money to be made.
I just don't understand why they're saying Indiana Jones 5 when I don't remember 4. Anyway, maybe we.
You are blessed.
They still need to go with our pitch for the next indie movie. Get Nathan Fillion on the horn. He's in my part of the country. If I called a few people, I could probably get a cell phone up to his ear right now. We can get this going
before he gets much older. Anyway, although at this rate, he may be playing the father if we keep this going much further out. But anyhow. Let's just move on to something else.
You can Edmund, do a Sean Connery accent.
No one can do a Sean Connery accent. I think there's some other kinds of...
Foot.
Okay, there's definitely some other news we can turn to, right? Please?
Yes.
Save me.
Yes, I will save you, and we've reached our casting news segment. Ding-a-ling-a-ding-dong.
Yeah, Edmund. There you go.
Oh, thank goodness for these Class A effects. B, C, maybe. Anyway, we have casting news announcements, and sure enough, just as I was not intentionally leading with, it has to do with Star Wars. Oscar Academy Award winner Forrest Whitaker has been in talks to join the cast of Star Wars Rogue One, the sort of interstitial or Star Wars movie that's going to happen in between the new trilogies. And it's going to be directed by, I'm a little anxious, the last Godzilla movie director, Gareth Edwards. Now, I guess they've finally reassigned somebody to this. It's going to be set between episodes 3 and 4 of the original Star Wars series. And it takes place about the same time that the current Star Wars Rebel cartoon takes place. It's the sort of setting up of the rebellion, so to speak, era of this story. So we'll have to wait and see. I guess they feel he'll be a big draw or add some gravitas to the movie. What do you guys think? I don't know if he's going to be the big bad or the ancient wizard of the myth, or what's your guys' take on that?
He'll make an interesting boffin.
Is it possible he'll be reprising his role from Ghost Dog, but with a lightsaber instead?
That would be interesting.
That would be very nice.
That would work. Yes.
It makes sense. Really, we need you to get you in Hollywood. Stat.
I haven't seen that for years.
Yeah, what can we do to get you to California? We'll work on it.
Yeah.
I'll work on it. I'll come up with something, Bronson. I promise you, I'll come up with some reason for you to be in California. Just give me a little time. I'll get it together.
I got the TARDIS right over there. We'll be good. Gary, we'll get this set up. All right.
I've got the TARDIS here already. It's not helping.
Speaking of supernatural, or at least very strange things.
Yes, Edmund. Indeed. Well, we have news of yet another Netflix project. They have a supernatural drama that they are coming up with and have now signed Winona Ryder on to star in it. This is it is a supernatural thriller, which is at this point untitled, but is apparently a love letter to the 80s classics that captivated a generation. In this series, this will be 8 episodes. A young boy vanishes into thin air and then reappears in France, presumably, returning to his other family. As, of course, friends, family, and local police search for answers, they are drawn into a mystery involving top-secret government experiments, terrifying supernatural forces, and one very strange little girl. And Winona Ryder will play.
Bum, bum.
Yes.
I thought it was going to be Beetlejuice, the TV series.
I would watch that. She reprises her role from the original film.
Exactly. Yes. But needless to say, she plays the mother of the missing 2-year-old who will summon a strength she never knew she had.
That's not nearly as interesting as reprising the role from Beetlejuice.
No.
Sorry.
And apparently it will be written and directed by Matt and Ross Duffer, who I did just notice have written a couple of Wayward Pines episodes, including the one we will be talking about later this week.
Well, there you go. All right. Well, let's see. We have one last piece of casting news here, and this one I believe we'll be able to see the fruits of not so long from now, in a couple months. Prompt them. If it works.
Oh, the joys of Australian internet connections. So we've got a casting report about Fear the Walking Dead, the spin-off of AMC's The Walking Dead. Sean Hattusey, I don't know. Sean has booked a recurring role on AMC's Fear the Walking Dead. Shauna's had roles in the series Southland and Outside Providence previously. As we've been hearing a bit lately, Fear the Walking Dead is going to be set in Los Angeles during the start of the zombie outbreak, rather than, you know, showing the aftermath like the original show. And according to the reports, the actor's going to be playing a well-intentioned but out-of-his-element military man with a soulful disposition. I'm not sure if that's a character description or someone's OkCupid profile.
Yes.
But then again, you could probably say that for a lot of these character descriptions.
Pretty much.
Like something off, yeah, it's like something off someone's dating profile. And you can tell what kind of show it's going to be by whether it's by where it falls on the scale of, like, you know, OkCupid or eHarmony or something up to Tinder.
That would be for, like, yeah, you know, bad VH1.
Yeah, that's the Stars HBO
yeah. ones. All right. Well, yes, that's we should be able to see what that casting means for Fear the Walking Dead. I still don't like that title, but whatever. In a couple months, because the show is supposed to debut late August. So, we shall see. All right, well, that is it for our news this week. So, after we take a quick mid-show break, we're going to run through our, I guess, shows 11 through 20 of our annual retrospective. So, stay tuned. Right, and as promised, we are going to be talking about the shows that didn't quite make the top 10 this past year, but made quite an effort to try and get there. And there are some quite a few good choices on this list, and maybe a couple surprises. But we're going to start off here with a show that is pretty close to wrapping up its second season, but not quite there. So we're still judging this by last year's efforts, and that would be Salem, which came in at an average for its first season of 8.04, so just over our above average mark. And Edmund, yeah, I mean, we've seen so much of the second season, it may be hard to go back and remember that first season, but any particular recollections?
Well, its main thing that it had going for it was the fact that it was going gloriously over the top and just embraced it. After Sleepy Hollow had made such a dramatic debut, and this was not that it was a direct response from WGN, but was in a similar vein, but just it was absolutely not taking itself too seriously at all, and that was what I think. What made it work so well?
Yeah, I definitely feel like it was trying to straddle that that line between something like Sleepy Hollow and, say, American Horror Story, and it found a pretty good medium, almost to the point where the shows on that it, influenced it are having kind of creative issues and network interference, while Salem just seems to be getting all the support that it needs. So I guess we'll find out if that continues. Next on our list is at number 19 is The Good Wife. The season 6 came in at an average of 8.07, which, as it turns out, was a bit of a revival for this season and hitting a high watermark after last season's high scores. This one came in just a tick above that. So this still marks as the highest scored season on our record anyway. And that's despite the fact that Nadim and Henry seem to be trading back and forth on which one could give it the higher and or lower score per week. But there we are. So even with the divisions towards the end of the season, it still wound up getting an above average score for its sixth season. The third season of Vikings came in just above that with an average of 8.09 coming in at our 19th slot. And yeah, Gary, you are also a devoted viewer of Vikings. Does it surprise you that it topped the previous season?
Oh, no, I think it continues to get better and better. So I'm really happy with that. I'm becoming more and more invested in Ragnar and all the other characters as we go on. So no, it doesn't surprise me a bit.
Yeah, and the fact that they left the third season on such a major cliffhanger means that the fourth season couldn't come fast enough as far as I'm concerned. Now, this next show, this is a little bit contentious, probably from our point of view, but also from all the fans that are wondering why it's only getting a 6-episode final season. But coming in our 17th slot is Continuum. Now, the last season that we saw was the third season, and it was actually a half-point drop from the second season down to an 8.12, which is still above average, obviously, so it still did very well. But as I recall, Continuum's third season took what was a pretty well-established plot thread and kind of threw it in the blender about halfway through. And after that, it was really hard to figure out where the show was going.
Oh, it felt like a very different show. Even as I remember recalling, the main character felt very off, and I didn't get it didn't seem like it was the same Kira that we had been watching to that point.
Yeah, there were a lot of things that happened, and especially at that midpoint where they basically came along and said, "Oh yeah, now that we've done all this stuff, the future that we've seen all this time doesn't mean anything anymore." Edmund Brunstam, any thoughts on Continuum? Brunstam, you only were able to weigh in now and then, but you seem to still be fairly positive about the show.
I'm still fairly positive about the show. But you are, you know, I think you are correct. Like the show took a swerve in the middle of the season, and the quality was kind of having to play catch up. I think it was not a bad storyline by any means. I think it did interesting things to the premise of the show, and it kept that main story thread from getting too stale. But at the same time, yeah, it was a hard left, and it took a little while for us to, I think, catch up with it and get back to enjoying it as much as we may have previously.
Yeah, I think my biggest concern was that since they opened up the story so dramatically, and then to find out that the show was barely coming back for even 6 episodes, leaving on a huge cliffhanger that I just don't know how they're going to, in that short period of time, bring the story back together into a conclusion. And that was kind of what left me even less happy about where they went with things in terms of expanding the storyline in its third season rather than kind of sticking to their original guns. I don't know if they maybe thought they had 5 or 6 seasons to really flesh this out or what, but I think even they felt like they got cut off at the knees by the near cancellation. But there we are. All right, well then, Edmund, any thoughts on Continuum?
Yeah,
lockstep here.
Yeah, no, I mean it was just unfortunate that a show that had done so well in the first two seasons in exploring time travel and really doing it in an intelligent way that we have hardly ever seen in film or TV. It wasn't quite getting to the depths of some of Orphan Black's convoluted plotting, but seemed to be having a little bit of that issue of where they. Excuse me.
Yeah, I think that CBC America is trying to silence you. That's all I can imagine.
But, yes, indeed, and doing quite a good job.
Yeah. We'll go ahead then and move on to a different topic here. Our number 16 show for the year, and that would be The 100 Season 2, which had a slight uptick from its first season, ending with a average score of 8.14. I think that even despite having the longer season with many more episodes that would have to maintain the quality, they managed to pull it off pretty well. So, yeah, and this one definitely was a case of very tight plotting across an entire season. The story arc was really well done, and even with a big break in the middle of the season, there was really no letting off of the quality in between. So one of those instances where having a break in the middle probably didn't matter, because they probably didn't really try to make it two seasons. They just made it one long story, like I said.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And also, I mean, you know, and managed to leave it on a pretty devastating finale too. I mean, the show from the beginning, when we all thought, you know, oh, it's just going to be some Hunger Games ripoff, and hard tax realism that they brought to it, they just really kept going with, and this is certainly a case where, you know, yeah, there would have been huge cries of anguish if it had not gotten renewed after that final image.
Yeah, no kidding. Coming in at number 15 for the year was Manhattan's first season with an 8.15. And, as I recall, that was a show that maybe benefited from when it was on the air in the summer last year. Not a whole lot of major competition. But at the same time, it was another one of these WGN shows that kind of came in and surprised a lot of people. And Gary, in particular, I think I recall you being a pretty big fan of this one.
Oh yeah, no, I enjoyed the series tremendously. I thought it was very good. Definitely the short season I felt helped it. I think this is one of those examples where a long season I think would have hurt it a lot more. They were able to keep the story a little bit tighter, even though I had the sense while watching it they would have loved to wander around a little bit. They didn't have the time to do so, so they had to keep plugging along, which I think was a benefit. I'm looking forward to the next season, and we'll have to see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not exactly sure when that's coming back, but
I hope.
No, it is. It is. Yeah, I think it's relatively soon, but I can't remember exactly when. I mean, I know WGN's certainly been showing not ad specific for it, but it's been, you know, they're running this big generic drama and person of interest in Elementary ads. So it's, you know, they're definitely reminding people that it's out there and coming. So
yeah. And looking forward to it, like you said, Gary, because it was a very good first season. Let's see. From there, we have our next show coming in at number 14 was... come on. Open up. There we go. Was Black Sails, which, again, a show that I think we all were a little surprised when it managed to come back for a second season. And glad to know it's coming back for a third. But it was actually an improvement, as far as our scores are concerned, over the first season, getting an 8.15, just like Manhattan. But a quarter of a point improvement between seasons there. And Bronstam, you didn't get a whole lot of chance to weigh in this season on the individual episodes. But, as I recall, the biggest thing about this one was that it ended with one of the best... bromance moments ever. Let's destroy a town together. Yes, that's.
Well, I think if we're going to be really technical, I think the biggest guy love moment happened a bit earlier in the season. it ended on this beat of I did not expect these two characters to team up and be quite so genial with one another, and given that it looks like this, one of the more one of the more effective, influential characters of the show has given up on the carrot approach and decided, yep, it's just gonna be stick all the way. I'm very interested in where the next season's gonna go.
Yeah. Thank you for your reference to perhaps one of the biggest things about the season, which shocked a lot of people, was maybe one of the best treatments of a homosexual relationship, really bisexual relationship, in quite some time. And have it happen right in the middle of the second season of Black Sails, of all shows, was kind of surprising, and yet still managed to bring a lot of character beats from a season and a half worth of time into clear focus. And I think at the time we mentioned that it felt like the kind of thing that would happen in a season finale rather than in the middle of the season. And for them to be that confident about the fact that they could then go on to still pay off a lot of other storylines in the second season and be just as noteworthy was a lot of confidence in their own storytelling ability. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, and I know certainly for me, I mean, one of the biggest things was I think this is one of those cases where the shorter cable seasons was actually working against it, and I know there were budgetary reasons for that as well, but that whole, you know, these two seasons combined really were the complete story, and so season one really was just really did feel just cut off in the middle, and then of course we get the actual resolution of the story. So season two, which I still think of as season 1.5, is was much more satisfying.
Yeah, I'm sure there are a lot of people who would agree with that, especially if you just watch it all the way through. It really feels like one in the same show,
yeah,
one in the same season. All right, coming in spot number 13 is a show that Edmund is going to have to talk to us about. But in this particular moment, it's Masters of Sex Season 2, which did come in at an average of 8.17. But as I recall, Edmund, you felt like it was a bit of a drop-off from the first season.
Yeah, it was the biggest issue for me was that they were injecting race into the show, but doing it by introducing storylines that weren't actually taken from Bill Masters' life, and it just wound up while it was certainly bringing up some interesting points, just wound up feeling very clumsy, and also was the season where they were having to speed things up if they're actually going to make it through to the publication of their report and the aftermath which they do hope to get to. So it was a bit of a transitional season, and parts of it were very, very good, and then other parts just had me throwing up my hands and wondering why they were doing that. it is also about to return for season three, so I hope they'll be on sounder footing this year.
Yeah, we'll have to see, and I guess we'll find out soon enough when we get your thoughts on the third season coming up pretty much in the next few weeks, right?
So, yeah, there absolutely, you. Yeah.
All right, the next two shows represent a couple instances where, well, shows that would have been in our top 10 dropped out. And the first one is a show that shouldn't surprise anyone if they heard our commentary on the last few episodes of the season, and that would be season 3 of Arrow, which came in at an average of 8.2. And that was a quarter point drop from the previous season, which still is the kind of high water mark. And I don't think anyone is too surprised to hear that it dropped out of the top 10. Bronson, I know you in particular had a lot of big words about the last few episodes and how they kind of dropped the ball on resolving the season in a solid fashion.
Yeah, it's very annoying when the show sets up an awesome storyline and then decides to, no, we're going to go the complete other direction and do the lamest things we can think of. It was a season that had a lot of good individual elements, but they never came together, and they dropped the ball big time at the end of the season.
They blew the landing, yeah.
Yeah, I would say that it wasn't even necessarily blowing the landing as much as also kind of not having the most consistent and strongest storyline across the third season overall. I think the problem is that if the ending had been good, it maybe would have been up in the, you know, maybe in the 10th slot or 9th slot, but it was never going to be like way up at the top, you know, top 5 like it was last year because, well, frankly, it just wasn't, it didn't get that momentum. The whole season felt like it was chasing after the legacy of the previous season and wasn't quite there. And part of it, I feel like, was, constantly battling behind the scenes, and they talked about it a little bit here and there, but with the movies and, you know, as is kind of infamous now, at least two or three different instances, they had to change their plans for the third season because characters were going to be used in Suicide Squad, and the movies basically said, we get to use them, so you don't. And this is kind of, you know, WB working with DC, perhaps, and rearing its ugly head again.
WTF, WB.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I also just found the very strange when we actually got to the end that it did sort of make unfortunate sense, but it's like, you know, okay, so you had Ra's al Ghul and he wasn't quite as compelling a big bad as he could have been, and how much of that was because, you know, no, you're setting up another main character to step in as an even better Ra's al Ghul. So it,
you know. Somehow I doubt that. Somehow I thought they wanted Ra's to be on par with Merlin and with Deathstroke and
mm-hmm.
yeah, there was, this was a fuster clock.
Yeah, it just was not a well-designed third season. Oddly enough, I can't necessarily say that about this next one, but it definitely had some issues that kept it from hitting the same marks as usual, and that would be the third season of The Americans. It got an average of 8.2 this year, which is more than half a point drop from the previous season, where it had definitely been in the top five. And that's despite one very big plot thread that I feel like energized the season tremendously. But maybe that's the problem. It was the one thing that the season needed to kind of give it a shot in the arm.
Yeah, that was, it's kind of... similar to what Ron Slim was saying about Arrow. I mean, there was individually, there was some amazing stuff going on, and certainly, you know, there were some scenes, particularly the Lois Smith Death in the Office encounter with Elizabeth, which sort of seared in my memory. But then there are other elements of the show. You know, this is a show that had been, you know, where all the different parts had been working so well together, but some of the stuff with Oleg and Stan, and Nina in custody, where things had been shifted around due to the circumstances from the end of last season, that just really weren't working as well, and I think particularly with Oleg and Stan, there was a lot more potential they had there for them trying to maneuver and outmaneuver each other, and they just wound up coming off as hapless, which was unusual given the way those characters have been built up.
Yeah, exactly. I'm left kind of remembering that there was this whole plot line with Gina. That where did that go? What was it for? I'm still not sure.
Yes.
And like you said, Stan and Oleg, there were all these subplots that kind of it moved a little bit, like half a page over on the outline, but it never really paid off anything. It's almost like it was just transitional season that they had this one big moment, which was of course with Paige.
Yes.
And of course it ended with that. And I mentioned that as kind of the transitional point of the season, because if you look before that moment happened, all of the episodes were barely getting an 8 or, you know, up to an 8. And then after that moment, every episode after that was 8, you know, well over an 8,
mm-hmm.
which is why it kind of wound up average where it was. But it was very much a tale of two seasons in that one short span. So, yeah, it's definitely a little bit strange how that season wound up. But it was another example of a show that had been in our top 10 and for many different reasons kind of dropped right back out. We had three shows, really, that were in that boat this past year, The Continuum, Arrow, and The Americans. But that means that we have still some really big contenders for the top 10, which we'll get into next time. And that will wrap up our retrospective for the 2014-2015 season. And that will wrap up this episode. And next time we will be getting into the best and the worst of the past week's episodes.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google Plus, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the Critical Myth.